Off the Ball, GAA.
No, and I see them lads behind me there, Christy Ring there with the head bandages. We need a few more of them for the guys in these Malies. Look, the Malies, was it a Malie? No, it was a bit of pushing and shoving. It's just that nobody wants to kind of back down at that stage.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
Ireland's Sports Breakfast Show.
In the meantime, we say good morning to Arthur. How are you?
Flying.
And Adrian Barry, welcome.
Ger, Arthur, how are we doing?
Better than Thomas Frank, I suspect.
Oh my God, the poor fella. The interview, people might have seen it last night, but Tottenham on the end of another defeat. And he deals with the interview quite well on TNT, reasonably well. He does get a bit tetchy. He has resorted to one-word answers, which is always the last sort of grasp of somebody who's barely hanging on to their job. And then the camera lingers for just a couple of seconds afterwards, and he's staring the reporter out of it while giving the firmest of handshakes. Most revealing in what wasn't said, I think, probably at the end of the piece.
Yeah, he's goosed.
He's gone before Arsenal in 12 days' time?
It'd be kind of mad not to.
It's a long time, isn't it?
It's just been...
To ride that out and...
I suppose who comes in is probably the thing, isn't it? It's like, oh, well, we probably should pull the trigger now, but... Anybody got Tim Sherwood's number?
God. But they're in serious butter.
They are.
Like, they're probably too good. It would be mad if
yeah,
if it went that way. Like, you would, it would really have to be a collapse of all collapses, because you kind of suspect they'd be able to grind out wins, maybe like the teams around them wouldn't. But then... Jesus Christ.
Well, it's become popular now to talk about it, which in even, you know, yeah, a week or two ago, you'd be like, oh, listen, don't talk about that. But I also don't think, and I was asking our right honourable colleague and resident Tottenham fan, John Duggan, outside, as to how real he, because he brought up the R word and the topic around all that. And I said, well, do you really feel that? I actually don't think that Tottenham fans really believe that it will happen. But I suppose there's a code about it now.
If West Ham had managed to hold out for another 2 minutes against Manchester United last night, they would be 3 points behind Spurs. And West Ham's form is actually pretty good. A draw, a defeat and three wins in their last five games. And they're a reasonable side. They've got a reasonable manager who is well equipped to deal with this.
They're probably better.
Suited.
Evidence would suggest they're better than where they are.
Yeah, yeah. And
obviously bad start to the year, so.
Other teams are doing okay at the moment in the relegation area, right? So Palace obviously won at the weekend, and that was a massive win for them because they would be on the same points as Spurs if they hadn't. And that was a six-pointer, so they actually ended up leapfrogging Brighton. And Palace are on 13th on 32 points. Then it's Brighton on 31. Then it's Leeds on 30, who are in excellent form, really. and got a 2-2 draw last night. If you haven't seen it, Cole Palmer misses a sitter in the 97th minute. And then it's Spurs in 16th on 29 points. Forest, who are going to sack their manager if he doesn't win his next game, which is always a great situation to find yourself in, according to yesterday's papers, are on 26 points. They play tonight. And then it's West Ham in the relegation zone. And after that, Burnley and Wolves are dead.
I saw Tottenham live this season and they were shocking.
You both did.
Me too, actually. Yeah.
Shocking. Like,
either of you see a chance?
No, it already felt like it already turned on them at that stage. That was like November, December, I think.
No, did you actually see the match that you saw?
Well, they scored twice.
Play.
They scored twice.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, well, that's better. I thought you saw them play. There's a nil all against Man United.
No, it was 2-2.
I saw a nil all against Brentford. And to say they were lacking in ambition would be an understatement. The goalkeeper got booked with 20 minutes to go for time wasting.
That was at Brentford.
That was that one. They had beaten Brentford comprehensively about a month beforehand at Tottenham. So they've got 4 points out of Brentford, which is not a mean feat this season, but that's about as positive as it gets for them. Shocking.
Forest play Wolves tonight. That's, in fairness, if Sean Dyche doesn't win that game, you would be, we're going to sack you. It's Villa Brighton tonight, Palace Burnley. So you'd expect Palace to get that win. City Fulham, Forest Wolves, and Sunderland against Liverpool kicks off at 8:15. Arne Slot says it's the hardest season of his career.
Yeah, I can understand that. I mean, I think a lot is tied up with Diogo Jota, of course. You know, managing that. Time will tell, I'm sure, about how they've had to address that as a team, and I'm sure the impact on that, like I've heard Quevin Kelleher talking about how as tumultuous as it's been for him and difficult, I'm sure, to deal with all that, like his sympathy towards the squad, having to deal with that, because I'm sure it's a daily thing. But I'm sure when he speaks in those terms, it's a lot to do with that, as much as the football stuff.
It's hard to know. He'll never be able to say it, though.
He will. In the passage of time, the books will come out and they'll do interviews. And it's not the time now.
Yeah. Why, though?
Why is it not the time now? It's just too recent. I don't think like they'd want to be...
It'll feel like an excuse.
And it'll feel like, you know...
But is that not what we're saying? Not in a negative sense, but say a cause rather than excuse.
Yeah, I think...
Is it not too... is a cause not like a makey-uppy... Often a makey-uppy thing, and this is too real.
Your Telegraph columnists would be like, oh, look at them parading their grief so that we can excuse their ineptitude. These millionaire footballers, why aren't they capable of... You can write that yourself, stick it in ChatGPT, put in the names of certain specific columnists, and you get 4 weeks of like, oh, they're damaging his legacy by excusing themselves, lazy layabout, good for nothing footballers.
I'm genuinely I'm interested in it because there's obviously no set. We're assuming, and it's not. We're assuming that's the, I suppose, the correlation to what has happened. That must be why that is.
No.
We don't know that.
Well, we're not.
You know what I mean?
I don't think anybody's saying it's the 100% reason.
No, it's a factor.
Nobody said it's 100%
reason. So if they were winning, would we view that differently as a factor? Or do you think there's any way a team would respond in a way that would have had, say, positive results off the back of
something
like that?
I think it's too real. Do you know what I mean? It's not like somebody's done the SEL and we're going to... not even like the infamous Luis Suarez t-shirts. Like, it's not that kind of a cause, I don't think. I think it's just too real. And he passed just before the season began, if I'm right as well. Like, there was no time to digest it. I do think there'll be a lot written and said about that over the years to come that they can't really do now. Like, even when they touch on it at times, you can just see how emotional. I'm thinking about Andy Robertson with like tears in his eyes after some of the games. And
after the Scotland game. So it wasn't
the
even
Scotland game,
it wasn't
yeah.
even a Liverpool game. Yeah. It was like the greatest moment of his life to qualify for the World Cup. And what he's thinking about is his pal.
Mm. And like, also, they don't need to talk about it. Every schlep, I just brought it up. Every schlep ever on this side of the microphone is talking about it too. It's not like a unspoken about factor. People understand it, I think.
Yeah. I don't think it's a... I think that they've signed a lot of strikers and they needed some defenders. They needed some centre-backs specifically. And some of the players have lost form. Some of it's attributable to that. Some of it is not attributable to that. Some of it also is, I think, that other teams have looked at what Slot did last season and gone, okay, we see the tweaks you've made and now we counter you with this. And he's like, ugh. So he's got the grief issue. He's got the unbalanced playing squad issue. He had the Mo Salah issue. And they also have the other teams got slightly better. That's a cocktail of things, I think. No?
Yeah. Who knows? It'll probably, the way it's going, it'll probably end up, I suppose, with him being relieved of his duties sooner rather than later.
Yeah.
But it is interesting, it is funny with the, there's I suppose a certain degree, but the the idea of nuance in football is so short-lived. That, you know, you can literally have any take any context you want or any sort of completely unfootball related off pitch incidents, but it will only kind of mitigate things for so long until it's ultimately your kind of fate is decided by what's happening. That's not right or wrong, I'm not saying that, but it is interesting. It's like, even whatever the circumstances, like, we're not winning games, you're in trouble.
Well, I think in a regular season he'd be a lot closer to the door, if that's the question.
Possibly. I don't know. I don't, like, it seems like he's pretty close. Like,
He might be out the door,
I've been surprised by talking to different Liverpool fans, like, how anti him they are.
Ah, they've hated him.
Like, it's so interesting.
I don't understand it either. They won a league. And I wouldn't say that they won the league out of nowhere last season, right? But at the same time, it was basically the same team. Right, there was had they added Chiesa and that was it. That was last year, and then he wins the league against the unstoppable juggernaut that was Pep City, who fell apart, which we didn't know was going to happen.
Yeah,
and also managed to swat off Arsenal, who everybody's like, oh, eventually they're going to get there. Eating bread is soon forgotten.
Yeah.
Knocked United off their perch. Well, did they join them on their perch?
Joined, yeah.
It's like, oh, that wasn't good enough. You know, we want to win it better. Yeah. Do you? What? All right, Clough. Steady on.
Throw your medals in the bin.
Very entitled, aren't they?
Liverpool fans.
Yeah.
But your pals in particular, I'm talking about. So yeah, you have specifics in mind.
Not the whole, you know.
Yeah.
Not the match goers.
But the football's been crap. Like, it's been useless this year. Everything you kind of seen them, and even those who are watching them all the time, like, it's so much more kind of predictable and pedestrian than they'd have been kind of come to use to in the last 10 years, particularly, I suppose. It's very hard to go back. Like, it's very hard to kind of be like, Jesus, why do we look like we're starting out all over again?
Well, yeah.
Just won the league. Why is it not kicking on? Do you know what I mean? It's that kind of...
Well,
if you're
multifactorial, Arthur, who's the thing, isn't it? It's,
yeah, if you're a club that's expecting to win things, though, it doesn't. There's not really a,
like, I'd say if you're looking at the Venn diagram of excuses, the arse falling out of the defence is surely the biggest chunk of that. The pie chart of excuses. You know, when they sit down at the end of the season and they go, he became terrible. He looked like as if he was trying to kick the ball into his own net for the largest part of the season. And if not,
and was successful on several occasions.
Give away penalties to allow the opposition to do it. He just became an absolute shadow of himself. This lad became much older, and we kind of might be looking to ship him out the door. And then other players, and then Saba's lies filling in positions he shouldn't be in. Like, I don't think, you know, I think if you're looking for the biggest chunk of it, I'd say that's probably it.
Yeah.
No.
But they're not. Well, they're not, I suppose, attacking with the same fluency that would have been the case beforehand.
Yeah.
They don't. They're quite hard to watch now a lot of the time. They're still good. They're still good at the second half against City. But it was even interesting how little cut through they had, which is just very unlike them.
I find myself watching Man United games at the minute, egging them on. What's wrong with me? I feel like this is one of those. Do you know the Dear Katie columns or whatever you get in the newspaper? Dear Deirdre,
is that the one?
Deirdre, that was it, yeah.
You sitting in your cacks. Oh, now that Ruben's gone, I really love this guy in his weird collar.
No, what was going on there for a second, Ger? I won't lie. Deirdre. I once had a fling with Man United when I was much, much, much younger, which I did. I came across some stuff recently at home, an old art folder from 1987.
You were 10?
I was 9 or 10.
Yeah.
And there was lots of lovely art in it. From my recollection of this art folder, giant big A3 pink art folder with lots of lovely works inside, was far superior than what I ended up uncovering, unfortunately. But anyway, that was what it was. The point being that across the art folder, there was a lot of...
I love Man United.
Scarf things, Everton written in the middle of them. I was an Everton fan much longer
after
than
the
I was,
85 Cup final.
I gave up on... My dad was reading the newspaper one day. It would have been around that time. Was reading the newspaper one day, which was the area, you know, you didn't have brilliant stuff like Off the Ball Breakfast coming at you at 7:30 every weekday morning. So that's where you pick up your bits. And he was reading a report from one of the matches, and Adrian Heath had scored. I was like, ah.
That was enough.
That'll do. And that was enough, yeah. There were heady days. They ended up playing at Lawn Town in St. Mel's Park.
Well, that would
in
help.
The off-season after that, but yeah.
So sorry, what year did you start supporting them?
The reason I mentioned that is because I was so hazy about the details of when did I stop that and pick this up. So yeah. That must have been, well, that was 87. So yeah, it would have been pre-85.
And so when did you start supporting Man United?
That was before that. So I supported Man United because everybody else supported them. And
so like 83, 84 as a 6-7-year-old.
Yeah, they would have been my first.
You...
My first love.
Went and then switched to Everton.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. I still get slagged about that from my mates. They're like,
you can't switch.
I've no credibility in the conversation because I switched.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. But actually, I think I've heard an awful lot more credible people than me have had the same experience. You've had it.
I was a switcher, yeah.
Who did you switch from?
I switched from Everton.
From Everton to Villa, right? Okay.
The 85 Cup final, everybody is Man United. Everybody is, Man United, because they're going to win it. That's why I'm supporting them. I'm like, well, screw you. And I picked Everton. I was like, oh, God, why did I do that? Literally no reason. Like, Everton, not particularly synonymous with Irish players down to the years. Like, yeah. And that that Man United team festooned.
Kevin Sheedy was in the team around that
time. He was,
team,
yeah. Well, time, I'm fairly sure that they have nobody for, like... Yeah, I mean, Earl Barrett was their first black player.
Big thing, yeah. Everton,
much
Everton,
later.
Everton had won the league in 85.
They had, but I didn't know that. Now,
They had Irish players though, didn't they?
Well, their first, I think, might not. Anyway, they weren't, nobody around us supported Everton. Mm. It was definitely random. And should have just picked Man United. Life would have been much easier.
Ah, yeah, but
on the pig's back, glory hunting, front running.
Jerry, you can't be like one of the bottle. Come on now.
No.
I also found a great photograph of myself on a donkey in Blackpool Beach with that class Everton kit. Remember the one with the white upper?
Oh, yeah.
And
Who's the player you most associate with that?
I think it was a knockoff, actually, looking at it back, which in my mind it was like it had come from the dressing room.
It's Andy Gray, that's my...
Maybe Andy Gray, yeah. Anyway, sorry, the point being that I find myself looking at Man United and actually warming
having
to them.
Having a soft one, yeah.
I switch again.
These feelings, I'm not comfortable with them.
I went to see Aston Villa playing, Paul McGrath was playing, that's why I switched. So
well, that's,
screw you, Carlinho.
That's fair enough.
I think, though, that there's something intoxicating about Old Trafford. You go and it's incredible. Like, there's like, maybe less so now, but I remember seeing them beat Juventus 3-0. It was Beckham's last season and he made a song and dance about going around and waving to the four corners of the stadium. And I think even the Juventus fans. And yeah, because one day I might play for you. And it is. They like that era, they were great to watch. And there was an excitement about them. And you saw the team line out last night. You're like, well, that all makes sense. Those are players in their best position, quite attacking, away from home in the Premier League. And then they played pretty shit.
Third game in a row with the same team. Third Premier League game.
Yeah, they play bad. I guess it's a hard, you wouldn't be too upset about it. West Ham were very good, really well organised.
United had specific, I don't know if it was that they played that badly, they just had very specific issues with scoring a goal.
It was tough. They couldn't get through the middle, as you were saying before, but they couldn't, there was no point crossing it for the longest time because until Sesko came on. So it's kind of just, it was a dog of a match really to watch.
Mm.
But it was kind of interesting. It was good, like West Ham's goal was great. Just very quick worked, well worked. But they were fine. Do you know what I mean? I think in the context and circumstances after Chelsea had done what they'd done and the likelihood that Liverpool, whatever happens, are going to get a serious game tonight at Sunderland. It's not a bad result.
They had one shot, despite the apart from the disallowed goal, they had one shot on target up to 75 minutes.
Yeah,
like,
which was cleared off the line. To be fair,
it was cleared
off.
It's good.
It's a good XG.
But
on
still,
that.
That's poor.
You were all given out about. You weren't here, so you're excused. You were all given out about Villa's result at the weekend, and then as the draw, and then I was like,
Villa were battered. Villa deserved to lose.
Good United result for results. There's no little description beside the results, Arthur. As you know, a point is a point. Villa got a point on the board from the weekend. You guys got a point on the board last night. That's the same thing.
It's absolutely worth the same down the end of it.
Yeah.
I'd say the trends. I'd be more confident coming off the back of last night than Villa after the weekend.
No football now for 12 days.
Yeah, it's good. Need a break.
Good rest. Yeah. You need it after all the exertions of this season. Yeah. Your 39 game season.
I hated
it.
On Tuesday night, I was like looking around going, sorry, what day is today? Monday. What day is today?
Today's Wednesday.
So Monday night, I was scratching around going, right, what are we going to do? There's like no football on. It feels like every night of the week though, there's...
I guess my point is that... away draws in the Premier League, not always a bad result, and everybody can calm down about it. They'll have Brighton tonight, we'll see what happens.
I see people there losing the head. Oh, they're the same thing. Man United can't low block, can't cope.
Carl Dillon.
It's not the same as that. I know where West Ham are, and maybe it's just a good moment that they're in.
Well,
but they're a very well, or like Nuno's got a very good record against Man United generally. I wouldn't be concerned about that after last night. Like, to what point? Like, it's not like Man United are going to win the league.
Oh, but finishing in the Champions League is all that matters for Villa, for Man United, for Liverpool this season, for Chelsea.
Yeah.
Those teams, that's all they're interested in. Everybody else is either scrapping for a place in the Conference League below that or avoiding relegation, and the two teams are trying to win it. Let's move on, because a couple of other things I do want to talk about. Adrian, we haven't had your view on the rugby yet. Don Lennon saying Italy come to Dublin with a whiff of upset in their nostrils. They're 8-1 in some places. I think they're bigger in others. 18.5 point underdogs.
Yeah. Well, I know you were tuned into the Sunday paper review, Jared.
Sorry.
We mean here.
Yeah.
It's a very distinct audience here.
To bounce back, Ireland must think faster and take more decisive action is Gordon Darcy's point.
Is the party over, Adrian?
Or were we just crap? Is there a possibility that actually, you know, if they all just caught the ball, just catch the bloody ball, lads?
I do think the party is over, yeah. But, like, we've sort of been sat in the party for the last while thinking that it was still on, while in the absence of any music or any other guests and all the beer cans were empty.
The lights are on.
It's felt a bit like that. But it's possible that, you know, somebody turns the lights on and somebody turns the lights off again and a few cans come in. I think that we can salvage. I don't think we're going to get beaten by Italy, I suppose, if that's where we're headed with this. Is it impossible? No, of course not. And obviously, they coming into it with a bit of momentum themselves. The main thing I don't like about the situation we're in is the timing of it. Actually, if it was 12 months ago, I'd be a lot happier with this. We are bringing through a lot of players. Not necessarily by choice. Obviously, a lot of them are injury-enforced, but equally, same net result. I just really would rather this was 12 months ago, because it does feel too... It feels like the World Cup is coming up fast.
Did it not happen 12 months ago?
Which, now the defeats?
Yeah.
Well, beat us in the Six Nations, all right,
I'm talking more about the players through.
Oh yeah, but yeah. I'm just interested because it doesn't seem to me that in the last 12 months there's been any great uptick or downturn. I'm pretty
in
sure
results. Well, we've been beaten by South Africa and New Zealand, and
but they were coming off
England
the back of another New Zealand defeat. I'm almost certain, weren't they? That December when Crowley started.
Mm.
I just don't think there's that. Except the only difference was Andy Farrell wasn't there, and kind of people would, I suppose, content themselves with, well, it'll be different when he's back.
Yeah. What's your point?
Well, my point is, like, you're saying you wish it was 12 years ago in terms, or 12 months ago in terms of the players coming through, but that, I'd say those issues were evident 12 months ago, and you'd say was action taken then?
No, it wasn't. And it looks like he...
Because the Lions tour.
And it looks like he wasn't inclined to make changes until the injuries kicked in. That's a worry for sure. Like,
and he wasn't in charge for the Maria, right? Obviously he was, but like, he wasn't going to start picking young fellas for a team that he wasn't actually in the, you know, apart from the ghostly presence either on teams or literally over there, you know.
We've all known this for a while that we've needed to build up our stocks, and that's kind of the worry. Like, you know, do we really care about Six Nations? I suppose we get to say that now after 0-1. But if you asked me a week ago, maybe I'd be saying something else. But I do think prioritising bringing players through, you know, given the age profile of key players and key positions. So I don't really care what happens with the Six Nations, to be honest with you. If we come through it and we've blooded 3 or 4 players, you know, despite Andrew Trimble's point about, you know, does that not just, if we're losing games and we're picking young players, that just proves that they're not up to it? I don't actually think that he really believes that, but I thought it was a good line. Obviously, there is a benefit to blooding players, and
we'll
they need
tonight.
Experience. there is a half glass full aspect to all this, and like,
go on, fill our cup.
Yeah, sure. Like, we'll, you know, beat Italy hopefully at the weekend, and there'll be green shoots, and like, we're very dialed into recency bias when it comes to commentary around sport.
Tell us about then, like, what matters if the results don't matter. Essentially, I think, not to paraphrase, but paraphrase, results don't matter. What matters from your perspective is that we finish the tournament with what?
A better sense of who our 10 is. I know it's the most boring conversation in the world, and I'm not opening it, but I'd rather we had a better sense, because there is like a growing swathe of opinion that Jack Crowley should start this weekend. And, you know, yes, there's a horses for courses aspect to it, and maybe we just need to bed in with all that, but equally, even internally, the uncertainty around that can't be great. Like, you know, we have an ageing, can I say indisciplined? Well, ageing anyway, midfield. That we need replacements for. Hugo Keenan's injury profile over the last while hasn't been great. We need certainty in that position. We need certainty across the front row. back. Like, there's a lot of, there's a lack of certainty all, around almost every area of the pitch with us, apart from scrum half.
And even then, I do wonder if...
Hooker.
So if we're going to be playing a kicking game and we're not going to be playing the phase game, because apparently you can't do that anymore, and we've got the one of the best scrum halves in the world for the phase game, is he as dynamic and brilliant playing that? Maybe he is. And maybe we've no choice, but maybe Nathan Doak is actually...
Oh, I just think there's no... I think first name on the team sheet stuff for Gibson Park.
Yeah, yeah. And certainly he was, right?
Yeah.
If our style of play has changed to the point where the thing that he did was he was the glue in us keeping the ball for 20 phases and then stretching you, and now we don't want to keep the ball for 20 phases. Maybe having a big lad who can kick the ball the length of the pitch.
I don't know what we're going to do. And I know Andy Dunn immediately after the game was like very protective around the kicking game. I have to say I was losing my mind watching it. I just, you know, even as a spectacle, it wasn't great.
No.
But then also we weren't winning any ball back. That's concerning stuff. Like, why would we continue to do that in the face of all evidence telling us this isn't the right thing? So, like, there's an awful lot more question marks than there are answers. And we're not going to get really, everything will be, even if we go and beat, like, listen, we scraped past Italy and we scraped past Wales in the Six Nations last year. So there's no reason to sit here and suggest that we're going to blow Italy out the gate. But really, no matter what happens, it is a bit of a thankless task and it won't answer a whole pile of questions, really. It'll be the England game, Scotland game, and Wales is in the exact same category as Italy, which is not to say that we couldn't end up being beaten by both of them.
Ah, you can't lose to Wales. And not a reopen a can of worms. I saw that game on Saturday.
No.
It wasn't pretty. No, I don't expect that to happen in a way that Italy could.
Look, if Scotland would need to have some remarkable recovery this week, otherwise it'll be a similar scenario. If Scotland get blown out like they might do by this England team, who are obviously owe them for recent performances, and then they were to beat us, you'd be like, oof. So I, that's why I think it matters a bit that Farrell has been away, has come back, the results haven't improved. They just need to put in a performance where everybody goes, oh, that looks like an Andy Farrell team, well, we can have confidence in that, and you're telling us that there's new players coming through and we'll see them over the next 12 months. Okay, let's go. As opposed to, say Italy win this weekend, then it's full-blown crisis. Like, then he's getting asked, do you think you're the right man for the job?
Because there's a whiff of that around already. There is a lot of people who also feel the very opposite, like Terry Hines here on YouTube. Very negative, lads. We lost to a brilliant team in France and we're losing vital world-class players. Don't give up hope. Like, there is a big swathe of people who feel this is all grand. I'm not one of them.
There are, but there'll be inevitably be kind of a shift in deck chairs in Titanic as well about it.
Mm.
There'll be people think, and I'm like kind of casual or more casual viewers, not to impugn Terry there, but like who'll still associate X name with their world class. Whereas I don't know if that always, it's probably not as static as it always is in practice, if you know what I mean. Like, just in terms of like, there's a weird thing with rugby, and I don't know if it's happened to other sports. It seems to happen a fair bit that, what's the way that it, you sort of age out publicly.
Mm.
You see very few people sidelined before they're done. It really seemed to use up every inch, every ounce of you. And you kind of see always the people on the downslope rather than people who kind of get out while still sort of, they're replaced before they're kind of...
Well, is that not a failing on the coaches? We need more John Kiley's and Paul Conurkson there.
Is that not a good thing though?
Well, it probably results in the kind of stuff now where you're not...
But like I was actually just thinking the other day, imagine if Peter Mahoney had still been on the field. Would a lot of that stuff, is there any prospect of a Mahoney was in that match day 23 that they would have been a bit soft the way they were? You know, that wasn't our character out there. We didn't show our identity. We didn't represent our country, as in we got blown off the ball. We were soft. We were cowardly in that first half was the subtext of what Farrell was saying, right?
Yeah.
Would that have happened if Peter Mahoney had been in the squad? Everybody would have been like, oh, he's done, he's toast, his leg's gone. But like,
but you can't have a team full of them either.
No, exactly. But South Africa have Dwayne Vermeulen, who's a million years old, playing in the World Cup semi-final and final. And you're like, well, get a Mahoney back out of retirement, stop cutting to him in the crowd.
I think the odd one of them is fine.
Yeah, but like...
But I think we're a team stacked with them almost at the minute.
Well, there were none in the pack, were there?
Well, I'm not basing it off availability last weekend. I mean, if everybody was available.
Well, he did. I'm just double checking for things. Like, he did start the game against France last year.
Yeah, but like you wouldn't have said that it was.
No, he wasn't on the pitch, I suppose, when the unpleasantness.
He might
started.
Have won a few of those. He might have won a few of those high balls.
Yeah, and look, I don't think he is a one man fix for what happened at the weekend. But I think that like it's one of rugby's good things is that they wring you out to the very end, and they use all your experience. The Munster players always spoke about the Maldini project and how Maldini ended up playing until he was 40 because they had great science. It was the science. They had a machine that analysed your blood and your muscles, your musculoskeletal thing. AC Milan did a big feature on it. And all those Milan players, I don't know if you've seen, as an aside, if you've seen Paolo Maldini recently, man looks exactly the same. Yeah, it's a slight tinge of grey. He did have the good genes, right?
Yeah, yeah. His father lived a long time as well.
Is he director of football somewhere?
I don't know.
I think he's still at Milan. I think he's still involved with the club.
Yeah.
A one club man.
I understand what you're saying, and there is that bit of trying to keep a bit of seniority. We were actually talking, was it before we came on air, about Man United and how they can't... Was that on air or off air? I can't even remember now.
I think it was
off. Harry Maguire and whether he should leave or not. And having Harry Maguire hang around and Bruno Fernandes, I think, is probably the right idea because...
But Ireland had loads of experience in that team.
But my point would be that there is a tipping point of experience where you actually need to get rid of some of it. And like it just becomes...
Stacked, like with experienced players. So is it something else you're talking about? With O'Mahony?
It's Peter Manny. It's an aggression about Peter Manny.
The bit of a dog. Heimer's B-word.
So who's playing in his position then?
Well, it would have been...
Prendergast the weekend.
Prendergast, or sometimes, occasionally he played seven, very rarely for Ireland, and that would be Van der Fleer. Van der Fleer is a lovely fella, you know? Like, everybody would be delighted if you came home.
World Player of the Year, wasn't he?
Yeah. But and he's out of form, you know? I don't know what point this you're missing, but...
It's not missing. It's like, if the answer after the last thing is we needed 36-year-old Peter O'Mahony there, I think Ireland's in bigger trouble than I kind of anticipated.
That was the answer. I didn't say that was the answer.
But you did say that was the answer. I was thinking,
wouldn't it have been great to have somebody like O'Mahony involved?
But you had so in the same general area, you had like Tadhg Byrne, who everyone's kind of saying is playing Byrne amazing again, rugby.
Yeah, again, but like... Well, let's move on because the point about Peter O'Mahony is he's legendarily aggressive. Who else in the pack is known for their aggression? Joe McCarthy, who had a disaster of a game. Tadhg Byrne's not known for his aggression.
Well,
Tadhg Byrne's like a highly technical, I am going to stand here and steal your ball. And O'Mahony as captain.
Who does it for Leinster?
Another lovely fella.
Who does it for Leinster?
Is a bit of a like dog or what are we talking about? Like,
well, like that. Who I presume kind of we could probably nullify down somewhat. There's an O'Mahony figure or an aggressive figure in every kind of successful
maybe
team.
Maybe there isn't. I don't know. Yeah. Maybe they need a bit more of that. And that's one of the it would have been Sexton for a long time. Mm. You know, like it would have been the absolute fever driving a team forward. And that was one of the things they identified in the aftermath. That's what Farrell was talking about. So
it's pushing.
Take it up with Farrell.
It does push the thing away from himself as well.
The
players didn't have intent.
Yeah, maybe. And maybe it's complete ass covering and it's a real real red flag about where he's going with this thing.
Well, it's a too big a statement for me to say that, you know, we lacked a bit of fire. It's too big a statement to just flippantly say that.
Yeah.
And I don't think this is not a throw my players under the bus character, Andy Farrell.
No, he's incredibly defensive about it.
So. But, you know...
James Tracy had the dominant tackles and it was like a million for them and none for us, essentially.
You're hoping that Lachman, Lukman, Clarkson, Prendergast, like...
Thought Milne was good when he came off the bench. I don't know if...
Ryan was good when he came off the bench.
Had that bit of dog in him. Left a little bit on, just on the fringes of legality. I was like, yeah, a bit of that would have been good an hour ago, wouldn't it? Arthur's trading with that. He's not that type of player into the WhatsApp group.
Timoney was good when he came on, but
we need a bit of that type of player.
Their players
well, you
that
don't, because you saw what happened against whatever it was.
Well, don't
South
do
New Zealand.
Don't do that. Do what you did at the weekend.
Sorry, Joe McCarthy in terms of a bit of a dog, but unfortunately, Joe is living on the wrong side of the discipline line.
He had a terrible game.
Bad dog.
Anyway, tonight we are in Belfast in the Ulster Hall for a roadshow. It is our Belfast debut.
That's interesting.
Well, for a roadshow.
What else would there be?
Well, we do live shows.
Oh, sorry. Okay, okay, yeah. Okay.
Or live games from.
Oh yeah, yeah. Sorry, no, that's the first time we've all in Belfast. But like, I'm curious. But that's great.
You can do the read now.
It sounds like a great show.
All over there. Do the read there. Go on.
Ulster Hall. It's all sold out. All sold out. So
Andrew Trimble.
If you're listening to this, Stephen, it's already Ferris, too late.
Brian O'Driscoll.
Brian O'Driscoll. Alan Quinlan.
I'd say there'll be a resale outside Fiona the door. Hayes.
Scalpers.
Of course, yeah. There always are.
We don't promote that.
Don't condone that.
I mean, I'm always interested, you know. I'm a capitalist at heart, aren't we? Like
Owen Shehan.
Yeah.
Star of the show. Anyway, we will be doing a GAA one in Belfast. Watch this space.
April.
Oh, very good.
Who's doing that? Don't be asking questions on air that we don't know the answer to, Arthur.
You might have an involvement with that one, Arthur.
It sounds great.
In fairness, it's going to be entirely your line.
Yeah. It sounds great.
No, you wanted to have the production meeting on air. Here we go. You're delighted now, aren't you? Anyway, I was in the middle of my read. Don't miss a second of that show tonight. If you haven't already got a ticket, you're too late. But you can get it for just €1 for a limited time only, your first month of your Off The Ball subscription with Six Nations coverage, expert analysis, The Continuing Wake, specialist podcasts and more. Try OTB for a month for just €1 and see why Ireland's rugby fans never switch off. Download the GoLad app and join in the obsession today.
Bundy Aki probably has a bit of a dog in him as well.
Oh, get Bundy back in the team.
Give him time, Jerry. He's a few weeks cooling off period.
It's a strange thing because the last few years and whatever have been so successful, people have lost all tolerance for a bit of pain. What age is Bundy Aki? 34 or 5?
35, yeah.
Yeah, like, there's like.
What do you mean people have lost tolerance for a bit of pain?
There's no kind of understanding that, whether you think they messed up the progression plan or whatever. And I don't think it's that simple because I know, like, what people have said as well about, like, it's not like straight after 23, there was loads of guys knocking down the door to get their chance and they were being held back. But. And Colin made the point yesterday, like, it's probably just an ear. Like, that's a great generation of players are kind of all fading out. And guys who are probably not great, but those kind of fellas who are elevated by being around great players and stuff like that. And when it's not there, their level might come down. And there's probably just a degree of that'll take time to regenerate.
We've had it good for very long. Like, yeah. There was a golden generation before this golden generation.
Unprecedented. Well, even that. But
O'Driscoll, O'Connell, like, Heaslip.
And they were all kind of the next generation achieved more than them again. Yeah. Unprecedented success.
Well, it's kind of... Yeah, I don't know about this. Essentially, the subtext that is know your place and don't be trying anything different to raise the standards. That's the subtext.
It's not that, but like if you take, so I always, because I think it's an interesting kind of parallel, hurling and rugby run really well side by side because it's about the same number of serious teams that can win in All-Ireland in a given year as a World Cup or whatever else.
I just introduce one immediate caveat?
Yeah.
The big nations, we get criticised for it in the Telegraph, which is carried today in the Independent. We get criticised for using the residency rule. The big nations all harvest either their former colonies for elite athletes, or they go off to the islands and they, a bit of extraordinary rendition of a teenager, and suddenly you're like, oh, naturalised, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. So, and you are professional. There is elite professionalism and endless hours of contact hours and coaching. That's my one bit about it. Professional sport doesn't.
No, I'm just talking about the trends in terms of success and the trends in terms of, if you just look at it kind of in terms of a certain selection teams with the tend to do better over a period of time.
And who are we in the, like, in
we're Limerick.
We're Limerick.
Yeah. We're not elite because we've never
Limerick
won.
Limerick actually won, yeah.
We're not, whatever way. I'm just saying, this is an imperfect analogy. I'm just saying that Cork. Ireland in terms of, historically, if you take it in decades worth of data, we've never been.
From the professional era. Everything
well,
before
okay,
that.
Okay, well, that's 30 years or whatever, 30-odd years. I just think that's, I think it kind of, it doesn't really matter.
We've had 30 years of continuous improvement.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. But why would you think that would stop just because the results now aren't great?
But
why?
You guys are saying it's going to stop now.
This is where my analogy was going. If you take the situation with thing like if you take success, someone like Limerick's success, that has already stopped in the immediacy of it. But the real legacy of that will be in terms of what you do going forward, what you did from that position of strength to improve everything else, to ensure now that your base is higher. But realistically, you're not Kilkenny, or you're not Cork, or you're not Tipperary, who will... There's just a thing with that. It's a cultural thing. It's bet in. There's more... Anyway.
Are we going to win the Six Nations this year?
But,
Ireland?
Yeah.
No, definitely not.
And has anybody talking about us winning the Six Nations?
No.
It's where are we going? So it has stopped. Because, like, I can't remember a time where we were... Sorry, I can, but it's been ages since we were heading into a championship saying we're not going to win one. Listen, it has happened after an opening round defeat. Of course it has. But, like, it's been Grand Slam chat, Triple Crown chat, like, exciting opportunities, the players coming through, how this is building for a World Cup. We're not having any of those conversations. So it has stopped.
And I don't think, to your point, like I don't think that means to me where all of a sudden you've just gone back and none of the progress has been logged and as if that hasn't happened anymore. I just think Ireland now is operating with a higher base, but like that, those periods of success where you are number one, as you're saying, like it relies on England and France to underperform. If you take everything at as equal and you say if Ireland, France and England were all performing at their highest possible capabilities, England and France should beat Ireland. They should always be ahead of Ireland.
The only thing is, right? The only thing is that you do play the games because, like...
Because there's fluctuations. Things fluctuate.
But also, the mistakes happen.
Absolutely. There's,
and our coaching ingenuity or an individual moment or a style or a pattern of play or a tactical level of perfection... Like,
yeah,
that's and we play the games, and we haven't given ourselves the best opportunity at the moment. And I think that that we should be looking outside of the closed system that we've had.
But all our coaches are from outside. The head coach of Ireland for the last, when is the last time? Like 2011, 12? It's been like 13, 14 years since we've had an Irish head coach.
Yeah, but Andy Farrell has been within
all the provinces. Like, all the provinces have external influence in them.
You're missing my point.
I'm not missing your point. We have to stop being insular. We're not insular. We're extremely the opposite.
We only play players who play for the four teams that we own. Yeah. We don't allow anybody to go off
again, but
and get stuff,
get
this experience.
This is a bit of a red herring. There's an issue, so that must be the solution.
I'm not saying it's...
It worked well enough the last few years.
It worked great to the point where it stopped working.
Jarrod wants
with 2 minutes left.
He wants to blow up the four provinces in terms of like let guys go.
Literally said, "I'm not going to blow it up," but you have to allow players to go.
But
if Tadhg Furlong had been off playing, earning an absolute fortune in Japan for two of the last 3 years, he might have missed the Lions tour. Maybe they would have done a deal with the Lions, and we would have had two or three tight heads getting way more experience than we have.
I don't think players want to go.
But
I also don't.
Should
think
we ask them? Do they not want to go because they can't play for Ireland?
No. Sorry, I'm sure that's a factor.
So
I think they don't want to go. They mainly don't want to go because they might end up getting flogged. Like, I think that the Johnny Sexton experience is the thing that exists in the back of people's minds.
Also, just a small thing with that. Players aren't stupid.
He failed.
But players aren't stupid in terms of, like, Tadhg Furlong's going to go to Japan for 2 years. Someone else comes in, lights it up. It's like, oh, Jesus, there's no home for me left. There's no place for me to go back because the guy who replaced me at Leinster and Ireland is now the guy who is the guy.
But I think they've all got used to being managed in terms of their minutes. And they don't want to leave themselves open to a top 14 schedule or whatever.
Well, let's keep doing what we did and expect different results. Because that's always a master plan.
But we had great results.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
Ireland's Sports Breakfast Show.